I'm going to call the meeting to order, even though we don't have a quorum, and when we get one, I will acknowledge it. We are in the process of hearing about what the agencies have accomplished with the money that they got in the last biennium and what they're intending to accomplish with the rest of it, so we can understand exactly what becomes the lowest priority so we can do some cutting. And when more members are here, I will invite you to bring suggestions about cuts so we can start wrestling with those. Welcome to the, with those words of hope and encouragement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. I'm going to try to raise this discussion up a little bit so we can help you get through your agenda today. I think we'll be talking a lot about the possible outcomes and impacts as we move forward and trying to develop the budget in the coming days and weeks, probably days from what I understand. So with that, we left off, and you'll have a new version, a black and white version of this table you should have before you. We left off on the Parks and Trails Division, which is on page 6. Madam Chair, and I'm just going to briefly, as we did last week, talk about the actions to date that have occurred since the enactment of the 10-11 budget, and then talk about some high-level outcomes for the division. The reason why we have a new version is for the Enforcement Division, we're still defining or trying to refine those outcomes. It's hard to take some of those work activities that are based upon hours and formulate them to fit within the outcome format, but we're doing our best, and that still is a work in progress. So, Madam Chair, on the top of page 6, you'll see the FY 10-11 appropriation for the Parks and Trails Division was $195,535. You can see of then the unallotments of the approximately $21.86 million in general fund. That number includes all the registrations, licenses, and activities that the customers, if you will, the way we look at them, of the department are paying for: snowmobile, cross-country ski, OHV, all of those dedicated accounts. So that $195 is mostly dedicated funds that's there. So if you go to the next set of columns there, the FY 10-11 unallotment, so the $21.86 million, $420 has been allotted in each year. The bulk of that from general management appropriation, a lot of it from our consolidated efforts between the Parks and Trails Divisions, $90,000 through a reduction in archaeological services. We are shifting those costs to the actual projects that we're putting the archaeological services or that they're doing. For example, the Lake Chetek campground, when we redesign that, we have to do an archaeological survey work and research. Those funds are paying for those activities since they're connected to that. And then $40,000 from the unallotted from the Wild and Scenic Program, which we're reprogramming or retooling the way we're doing this monitoring and enforcement of these easements. As we're out in the field, we're out in the river, we're having our parks and trail staff and also other DNR staff monitor and make sure that we're keeping an eye on these easements as we're out there. It's a way that we're going to need to look at doing business on other things as well into the future, just as an efficiency's sake. Rather than have a parks and trails employee, a fish and wildlife employee, we need to be doing this cross-pollination, cross-monitoring work for everybody, so make sure everybody's aware of the work that's going on. Then you'll see the $800,000 reduction. We talked about this in forestry. Those special recreation events that are occurring in the 56 state forests throughout the state, those activities have been transferred into the Parks and Trails Division. It resulted in a savings of, I believe, $240,000 from the Forestry Division by reprogramming those efforts into the Parks and Trails side of things. Madam Chair, moving on into the actual, what's remaining in the budget now in Parks and Trails, you can see 42% of the budget, about $81 million, is related to state park and rec area system management. The big goal here is to provide comprehensive visitor services and make sure that our services are satisfactory, that people are enjoying their stay. We take very seriously our job in providing that level of opportunity so that people are safe, comfortable, happy, and we try to maintain that as much as possible. Certainly some of the legacy funds that were passed last session with our naturalist programs and things like that will help bolster this as we're just getting online and starting to fill some of those positions right now. The naturalist corps, I believe it was, that was established. So that will help boost and enhance our visitor and usership. One of the highlights here, you know, we're looking at reducing our fleet costs as well, moving towards an electric fleet, wherever possible within our park system. I believe we have 15 electric cars right now. They're working very well. We're hoping to integrate those more into the system as we move forward. And also a highlight is leveraging volunteers. It's a outcome of ours. A goal is to leverage volunteer hours as much as possible. And over the next biennium, we're looking to leverage over 130,000 hours of volunteer time to help us serve as campground hosts and other workers within our park system.
Do you use, there are big volunteer programs for forests, for example, in Illinois. The Forest Reserve has a big volunteer program. Do you have programs that are specific to a ecosystem that, like that? For some reason, that seems to attract a lot of volunteers in the Illinois area. Do you have anything like that?
Madam Chair, we have a vast array of volunteer programs. On the Parks and Trails side of it, it's focused on Friends of the Parks groups. So rather than the ecosystem side of it there, it's focused on Maplewood State Park or Itasca State Park. The local community really bands around these facilities and really take pride and ownership in that. But it's something that we need to look at a little bit more as we talk about wetlands and forests and prairies and things like that. So we don't specifically have anything like that right now, but we appreciate the idea, and we'll try to look into that a little bit more.
I mean, I think the outcome of having a lot of volunteers is a good, strong outcome. So do you have a measurement chart, like of how many volunteers you have? Is that increasing or decreasing?
Madam Chair, I don't have that with me right now, but I can get back to you on that. I think it's increasing because we just have a tremendous outcry for people who want to do this kind of stuff, not only from the average citizen, but also of the different user groups or stakeholder groups that are out there. In this area, the OHV Ambassador Program, for example, they brought on themselves to self-organize, to self-monitor and help us police and watch over the activities that people are doing in our forest ecosystems. So there's those type of specific things, but there's also, you know, our partners such as Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever. In the prairie areas, there's a lot of local groups that do those types of things.
You know, this committee should discuss whether having a lot of, I mean, we've measured outcomes as the number of visitors to our park. Should we be measuring the number of volunteers as an intended outcome?
I'm going to try to pull some more information together for you on that and get that to you.
I mean, but that's my kind of my basic question. Is that one of our intended outcomes that we should be tracking? No one seems to have an opinion but me. of course, I recognize that we've been working late hours. And
Madam Chair, I think
Before you say a word, I'm going to send the page for coffee. This is very good. Representative Doty.
We hope that helps, Madam Chair.
For me, it will, for sure.
Tidying myself over here. Madam Chair, I think a measurement of the volunteer activity would be a good thing for us to know, because I think it ties in with the perceived value of these facilities in the community. If your local businesses are gaining by people coming into there, for example, I think you're much likelier to have local support. And since everything gets tied together and turns into business sooner or later, I think that could be valuable for us.
So the question would be, I think, is it the number of volunteers we track or is it what they do for us that we track, or do we... sometimes volunteers can contribute so much, and sometimes not so much, but we ought to be talking about that a little bit, too, I think. Representative Scalzi.
I think that it would be a good idea to know what they're doing and exactly what you're saying, to track it somewhat, because I don't know what they're doing. If I'm in a park, I would know maybe mm-hmm. what they're doing, but I'd also like to know what it costs us to, because we have to train those volunteers or somehow manage those volunteers, and I think we need to know that as well, so that we know what the cost of doing that job, how that relates to how it lowers the cost of managing the outcome.
That's I see some training of staff in one of the LCCMR proposals. It's one of the stronger proposals. And I wonder, do we have that kind of volunteer training which makes volunteers more productive and then feeling like more they're part of the system?
Madam Chair, yes, we do. We have, it's not a division, but we have a volunteer service coordinator. We have several people who work very actively on these activities across the division, coordinating our volunteer services. But then again, we have, each division has its own fleet of volunteers, not only in the parks and trail system, but in when we get to enforcement, the safety training program that we have. You know, several years ago, we celebrated our millionth child or person who took the firearm safety program. And there is some training, there's support that goes on, there's material preparation. But then there's also the liability part that we assume. So our network of volunteers do a lot more than we can do. Or they do the things that we just don't have, I don't want to say the time for, but that we just can't do right now because of resources or staffing, things like that. And people are very proud of the work that they do, and they're proud of being a part of a department that they enjoy what the outcomes are. So... I'll just pull some more information together and send it out to the committee on our volunteer activities and how they're coordinated and located and things like that. I think it'd be good for you to see.
I'm hearing some kinds of volunteer activities, and the one I brought up, the Forest Reserve, is really monitoring and helping the plants, things in the forest. Is that one of the volunteer activities that we have, either people working on wetlands or forests or prairies or other?
Madam Chair, I need to look back at the specific types of activities that the volunteer programs are coordinating. So I'll examine that and get that information to you here as soon as possible.
Okay. You want to continue?
Thank you very much. Moving on to...
One thing for outcomes. Park visitation, trails visitation increasing?
Yes, Madam Chair, you'll see there that on page 6 under Parks and Trails, that first number 1 there, we've had over 910,000 overnight guests and over 8 million recorded day visitor uses this past year. Overnight is up about 10-12%, and the day use is up more than that. So I don't know if it's partly because of the economy, which is what we're assuming, but the weather was great. The holidays kind of fell on the right time of cycle. So our parks were busy all year long. People were very happy, and I think they had a great camping and park enjoyment season. So we look forward to providing that continued level of service, no matter what we're faced with in the future. So it remains a huge priority for us. On page 7, Madam Chair, you can see with the state trail system, it's about 8% of the FY 10-11 budget, $15,200,000. And the one thing this doesn't reflect is how much of that is general fund, but a lot of that is all dedicated funding because, at least on the motorized side, non-motorized side is all general fund. Motorized is all coming from different resources, user fees. The non-motorized side, you can see our example indicators are acres of vegetation restored and managed, miles of trails. In this case, we have horseback riding trails rehabilitated. On the motorized side, which is about 3% of the 10-11 budget, miles of trails maintained, miles of state trails or bridges rehabilitated. This, again, is a safety issue for us. We try to maintain those trails in the best possible shape. Some of the outcomes are connect communities throughout the state trails, provide introduction and interpretation to the natural resources, update about 35% of our maps on some kind of regular cycle as they need it, and then maintain 660 miles of seasonal trail for the motorized use on the motorized side. Then under that, you can see the legacy funding impacts are what the outcomes we're hoping to get with the legacy funds that were appropriated, and we should be on track to meet those targets.
I mean, the basic outcome here, though, is people using the trails and being having a happy experience doing that. Have I got that correct?
Madam Chair, yes. And I think, again, that, I don't know how many people Representative Lilly sees on his way to work these days, but once it's warmer out, he probably sees a lot more people on the Gateway Trail. And that's a very successful segment. And as we look at those types of segments that lead to kind of commuter opportunities, I think in the future there's going to be more demand for that as well. And we're trying to plan for that type of system.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just kind of, you know, recently we've had these articles in the paper that about the issue that you've brought up and Mr. Reinholtz about the gaps, you know, between what we have and what we've acquired and where we're at. And Commissioner, I'm kind of a visual person, and maybe you have this, and maybe this has already come up, but I'd just like to see a copy of a map. Do we have, like, a map that would actually show, you know, what we have, a trail, and then what's actually been built that have passed that shows what's acquired, and then, you know, or parkland, and then, you know, does this exist? I know through Legacy we're doing mapping with the University of Minnesota, and then, but it would just be really helpful for me just to kind of see it on paper.
Sure.
You know, not just numbers or not just, you know, to actually see this. So it already exists? Did someone ask this question? Sorry. I'm getting some laughing going on over here.
Madam Chair, Representative Lake, actually,
that's the price I pay for being late, I think.
I don't think we've handed anything out to the committee, but we will, because we have prepared just this map at the chair's request. A map of the state trails that are up and running, so to speak, a map of the state trails that are designated but not developed, other proposed trails. So we can get that map to you. I'll print off some copies and get them over here as soon as possible, Madam Chair.
I think it's always helpful because this is a huge system, and just to remember the whole thing is, it would be good to do that. Thank you.
All right, Madam Chair, I'll move ahead if we don't have any other questions. Under C here on page 7, State Forest Recreation, the objectives we have over 1,000 miles of non-motorized trails, 390,000 miles of hiking, 275 horseback, 250 mountain bike, 170 cross-country ski trails just on state lands alone, 1,100 miles of snowmobile, 800 miles of ATV off-highway motorcycle, 140 motorcycle and 23 truck trails, 100 miles. It's about 4% of the Division of Parks and Trails budget. Again, mostly user fee paid for. Just skipping over to some of the outcomes. Continue to survey what the needs are. Look at that need that's out there. Making sure that our trails are funded and monitored. Implementation and finishing of the, actually we're done with this now, the forest classification process. We need to circle back and re-examine these forests that we have classified. It was a huge process, one that we're happy to be done with. I think we did very successfully, but we need to start circling back and looking at what we've done. Complete some horse track projects, and then improve and expand mountain bike opportunities in two state forests. Those outcomes are pretty broad. I mean, we're working on narrowing down the outcomes for all of these into more clear outcome statements, but the purpose of this document when we developed it last year was to use it for our budgeting of the complete budget, so that's why these outcomes are pretty broad there. Moving on to water rec area, this is about 11% of the budget. Some of the example indicators are water access sites rehabilitated, to reflect best management practices. I think the one that I like to highlight is one that we've done up in Representative Purcell's district on Lake Bemidji. It was just recently completed over in the Northwoods area. It's the state of the art. I know there's bad ones out there. We need to circle back and redo those ones as well. But certainly collecting water, runoff, managing the runoff from the parking lot so it doesn't go into the lake, and vegetation around the sites are where we want to be with these facilities. You can see some of the outcomes are to operate and maintain our 1,600 public access sites and fishing piers, adding to that system when we can, 30 existing sites be rehabilitated, and then desert manage our water trails, which are becoming more and more popular, both motorized and non-motorized. Our canoe and boating routes, kayaking routes are something that people really enjoy. I know we're working on the Blue Earth River right now. It's just a huge opportunity we need to continue and maintain.
How many miles do you have of specific routes that people kind of remarked? And
for boating routes?
Like canoe routes or motorized routes, yes.
I just saw that here.
Oh, I see it. It's
4,350
miles of water.
4,350. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's right.
Do we know how many people use those?
We could do some estimations, Madam Chair.
Is your feeling that a lot of people are using them?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at the registrations, that's one area that we're seeing registrations increase.
Okay.
Rather dramatically on 19 and under foot canoes and kayaks and things like that. It's very popular.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And following up on that, Mr. Meyer, maybe you've already gone over this, but like when someone registers a canoe, does that, for a canoe license, does that go into that account? And, you know, I think I paid like $19.50 or something like that last time. How does that money break down? I mean, how much goes into that? How much is processing? What happens with a canoe license?
Oh, and I don't have my book with me. Let me just break. There's a part that goes into the water rec account from the registration. There's a registration fee that's there and an ELS fee.
Why don't you have that broken down and we'll send it around to committee members, because I suspect there are going to be lots of questions about that.
Yeah, and on that note, I know I'm working for an answer to Representative Scalzi's question about rowing skulls over 19 feet long. I have a response for you on that. I'll just coordinate all that information together because it kind of ties into that.
Yes, if you'll give it to the committee, we'll get it out to everybody.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, moving on to page 8, talking about natural and cultural resource management. This is about 4% of the budget, looking at land cover mapping, controlling invasive species, collecting seed for prairie and forest reconstruction project, and implementing monitoring and management programs. Related to this, you will see some language that will allow us to capture the revenue from management activities on state parkland to do these activities into the future. Right now, when we do a forest management activity, for example, a thinning of a tree stand, those revenues aren't deposited into the natural resources account for us to do this work within the state parks. We're hoping to have your support to be able to do that into the future, because it's not like we're going to be looking to fund these types of activities through harvesting, but it only makes sense to be able to capture the revenues from some forest management activities or natural resource work that may occur within a state park to do improvements within that state park. So we'll be talking more about that in the coming days, I'm assuming. Lastly, here on this page, conservation, education, interpretation, and outdoor skill building. Though it's about 4% of the budget, this is a very important piece, as we just spoke of. Natural and cultural heritage programming, conducting 1,500 state park conservation education programs per year. We're hoping to be able to increase that in the future. And conduct 50 outdoor learning special events per year, Naturals Trail Days, Big River Journey, Great Camden Campout, I Can Camp, geocaching. These are all examples of what we're trying to do to bring new users into the park and actually have experiences where people have never done it before, and those are very successful. That outreach and education is important for us for the park system. We're looking at the parks as a gateway to the outdoors, if you heard us talk before, fishing for free when you're in a state park and things like that. Having tools that they can actually, fishing poles they can actually go fishing with and things is very important to us. Moving on to page 9 here, community assistance. This is our grants programs that we run through the Parks and Trails Division. Represents about 25% of the budget, $48.9 million. You can see it's grants and for local units of government, for trail, water, recreation facilities. Grant programs, we administer about 360 grants per fiscal year. These include grant and aids for snowmobile, ATV, cross-country, ski, but also for parks and things like that. You can see that.
How much of this is in general fund?
Madam Chair, I think all of this comes from dedicated fund. No general fund.
No general fund here. Okay.
These are the monies that the users pay into the funds to help manage the system that they participate in.
Just thinking about budget cuts, that's all.
Madam Chair, I completely understand. So our goal here is to provide and maintain a usable or a user-friendly system that people will use and maintain. If there's no other questions, Madam Chair, I'm going to move on to the Division of Fish and Wildlife. And again, I'm going to try to keep this at a very high level if possible, keep you on track. This is another division where there's very little general fund. The FY 10-11 budget was $194 million. There was some general fund unallotted. In the first round of unallotments, $265,000 each year, 10 and 11, from our working lands program. It says Prairie's Wetlands Program. Salary savings and other non-grant expenditures related to managing of the program have been reduced. And then on the general fund reduction side, we reduced some fisheries management by $205,000, aquatic plant management, and some tribal treaty management programs, monitoring specifically. We're looking to support these programs through the Game and Fish Fund. Basically, we reduced some population survey work, lake management plans, and some technical assistance activities, shifting them more towards dedicated funding.
What is the outcome of your unallotment from a Prairie Wetlands program? What are the results of that?
Madam Chair, they're basically related to not filling vacancies and some other operational efficiencies there.
I know, but what are the results for the Prairie Wetlands?
Yeah.
That's not on. I'll get that for you. I know that stemming from our discussion previously, we need to talk more about that area in particular. Okay. So I will get that for you. Moving on into the remaining budget, you can see fish and wildlife population management is about 32% of the budget, $64 million. Some of the big example indicators, CWD, chronic wasting disease sampling and monitoring, VHS, bovine TB, stocking of fish. This is the active management of our populations for health and for sustainable levels of populations. This year we've stocked 156,000 pounds of walleye were stocked in 2009. It was one of the most aggressive years that we have purchased fingerlings and fry from the private industry, just because our ponds, we weren't able to get in some of the ponds this year because of the weather. The wetness didn't allow us to get in and to harvest some of our stock that was there, but also the need that was out there exceeded our ability to produce. So we did stock a lot of fish this season. People were very happy with those activities. Moving on to the fish and wildlife habitat management, it's about 38% or a little almost $74 million. This is working with AP, aquatic plant management acquisitions, Stream Lake Wildlife Habitat Improvement Projects. Our acquisition programs have been running full steam over the past probably 4 years. You can see the acres we've acquired in 7, 8, and 9. In 2009, almost 4,000 acres, 3,775 acres were purchased, protecting a total of 54,000 acres from 2002 to 2008. we're working on information to identify and develop a plan to come back and do that restoration management of these lands, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure if we've submitted that to you or not yet, but we have the information to talk about what is needed out there for the management of these lands.
That would be helpful for this committee to have.
I don't have that in front of me, but I will make sure that that gets finalized and gets to you as soon as possible. It was a good exercise for us to go through, and like we've done with the parks and trails, hopefully we can all lay out some plan to do these activities into the future in a systematic approach.
You'll be giving dollar amounts to Mr. Reinholtz. Is that what you're suggesting here?
Yes, ma'am. I will forward. I don't know if it's been forwarded or not, but I will forward that information to you.
Because I think it's been extremely helpful, the work he's done on parks and trails and the work you did on the various lists of lands that need to be acquired. It gives us a picture of how far we're behind. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the Commissioner how fast he is of getting that map to me. Thank you for not embarrassing me publicly. The staff did, laughing over there. That apparently this map was handed out by me even. So, thank you.
Thank you for sharing, Representative Lilly.
I'm going to have some caffeine right now.
Madam Chair, moving on. Some of the example indicators here, a number of shoreline miles protected, amount of lakeshore habitat restored, acres of prairie wetlands, grasslands protected, 4,400 acres in 2009 of prairie wetland complexes were protected throughout these activities. It includes CRP, RIM, CREP, WRP, prairie bank easements, wetland restoration projects, working with those private landowners to understand the projects and the programs that are available to them. On page 11, talking about technical assistance, it's about 10% of the Fish and Wildlife's budget. Farmland assistance programs, number of development projects with an environmental review, number of habitat acres affected by development projects. This is where we're looking at the trends, primarily in the 11-county metro area, what's impacting our wildlife habitat, but throughout the entire state. You can see some of the outcomes there. It's to create offsets to the losses, including the acres of WMAs that we've produced or procured and working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. An example is the long-range duck recovery plan. We're trying to utilize, develop these 4 to 9 mile complexes of grasslands, prairies, wetlands to provide the habitat. The amount of land that we're seeing lost due to CRP rotations and things like that are rather alarming. We aren't able to offset that completely, but we're doing the best we can, working throughout a bunch of a menu, I'll call it, of conservation programs and making sure that people are aware of them and participating in them.
Yes, I regret that in our budgeting between our bonding bill, which we had $25 million of money for wetlands and the outdoor heritage, which I think had $6.7 million, we are still short of the amount, the number of dollars it would take to match the federal funds that are out there. We're considerably short, and I think we need to you're giving us these targets, these losses, and why we are not able to use this huge amount of federal money. I think that's something this committee needs to discuss. I don't know if anybody has any opinion on it right now, but that's something we should chat about.
Madam Chair, just to put that in context a little bit, the loss of acres enrolled in CRP, the Federal Conservation Reserve Program, in 2008, we lost 42,000 acres out of that program in Minnesota. In 2009, 83,000 acres. We just can't keep up with those types of losses with our programs out there. So we need to work not only at the state level, but at the federal level to make sure there are programs for these lands to be enrolled in, or try to tweak those programs so a landowner can stay in them. They don't have to come out. They don't have to deal with the complications that are involved with re-enrollment and things like that.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Meyer, on those acquisitions, you mentioned private landowners. Does the department ever purchase lands that are already in the public domain, let's say buying with fee title, something that's already has a permanent easement, maybe a rim easement on it, or perhaps paying for land that's owned by a local unit of government? In any of those acquisitions that you mentioned, or is there any precedent for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I don't want to say never. Very rarely will we do that. If it is part of a complex we're trying to create or adjacent to a complex, if there's a really good reason to acquire a piece of land that would do that, we may do that. But then we would look at the appraised value, subtract the value of that, those bundles that have already, sticks that have been already procured off of that land, that easement, and then pay the difference of that. But I can think of one or two examples where we have done that, but as a practice, no.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Meyer, so maybe another try at never. You would never pay full market value for acquiring land that is already eased. You'd be paying the residual value.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, by law, we can only, the appraisal would take that into consideration, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, and we can only pay appraised value or a little bit more if the circumstances allow.
I think that's an important point that he just made, Representative Hansen, by law, that he can only do that, and that I would think is the correct interpretation of the law. Would you not think that is?
I'm sure. I think the question would be, is it a appraisal, or is it certified appraisal? Is it, there are a couple appraisals? Because I think it's hard to say you have full market value when you've got an easement on there to buy for. But I realize what the law is, but I'm looking and asking the department if they have any history of that. If they're buying a few sticks on the bundle of sticks, I would think that the appraised value would be less than full market value.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, that's the appraisal that is certified. Have to take that into consideration. We actually have some direction on this, and I'll provide you a copy of that we use internally to making sure people understand how we're doing this.
That would be helpful. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, you continually are referring to CRP acres that go out of the program as lost. Was the CRP program designed to be a permanent set-aside program?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, no. I mean,
so if they're lost, where are they going?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, most of them, from what I'm familiar with, most of them are going back into production.
And is that a problem?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, no, we need to maintain it, but it creates a set of circumstances where there may be land that was enrolled in the program for certain reasons that now, when it falls out, needs to be re-harvested in order to be eligible for the program again. Some of these lands were enrolled because they're highly erodible, sensitive. They're the lower productive lands. In some cases, so putting them back into production may cause an opportunity for certain for erosion, things like that, to occur again. We try to maintain it. We're trying to look at maintaining the best for production and protect the rest is kind of the way the department looks at it. And when some of these marginal lands have been enrolled and then they need to come back out, what we try to do is work with those landowners to make sure that they're aware of other opportunities that are there for programs for them to be in. Certainly a healthy farm economy is something that we want to support as well. So it's that balancing act that we need to maintain.
Representative Torkelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Meyer. You know, the key words I heard you say are some and may. Not all of these acres are necessarily as sensitive as others, and to give the impression that they all are extremely vulnerable properties is inappropriate. Some farms are put on a whole farm basis, and acres that were enrolled were certainly viable, productive acres that may be very valuable to farmers as production acres rather than CRP acres.
Madam Chair, Representative Parkinson, I apologize if I gave that impression, but that certainly wasn't what I meant to do, because I think that last statement is, you know, protecting and producing is where we need to be. We need to have a, we need to make sure that lands that are very productive remain productive, and the lands that should be protected are protected. And that's where we need to work, and we want to work, and we are working with the agriculture community to do that.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Torkelson got at my question here, but I just want to follow up quickly. Is there an effort, Commissioner Meyer, for that the DNR is involved with, or maybe you may not know, but SWCD is involved in concert with the DNR to focus on these potentially highly erodible lands as opposed to the ones that don't need protection, perhaps?
Madam Chair, Representative Purcell, yes. I mean, that's what our private landowners programs do, and our prairie wetland specialists are doing it. At the area level, we have local staff working with the soil water conservation districts and with the Board of Water and Soil Resources to go out and work with the landowners to make sure that they understand what they can do, what their options are, what other programs are out there. I mean, there's, as I said, a menu of different conservation programs that these landowners can participate in. And making sure that they're aware of those and understand how they work and how they interact is what we try to do at that local level.
Quick follow-up, Madam Chair. Is there adequate funding to carry that out at this time, in your opinion?
Madam Chair, Representative Purcell, is it adequate funding is an interesting term these days. We try to do the best we can with the resources we have, and you know, this is one of the areas that practically we need to evaluate, do we have enough to do it effectively, or do we just allow somebody else to do that for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to keep it interesting around here.
You could continue.
Madam Chair, moving on to outreach and departmental programs, this is where we're focusing on increased multicultural, urban, and youth participation in the outdoor heritage. You can see the outcomes are national archeries and schools programs. There's over 100,000 participants as of June 2010. Highly successful program, getting people interested in not only the shooting sports, but also conservation and archery programs as well. You can see the number of youth 12 to 17 who participated in archery big game licenses in 2009, 8,600. One of the things we're looking at here, we have a youth hunter initiative this session to help reduce the barriers for youth to be able to participate in hunting. It does come at a cost to the Game and Fish Fund, but one that we feel in the long term will provide a boost not only to this area, but also to the people who understand and participate in our outdoor and conservation opportunities throughout the state. Lastly here, we have a public information and customer service. It's about 9%, licensing, permitting, things like that. Making sure that we're managing the 3.5 million ELS transactions that we have, sending out the hunting and angling registration books. We're rolling out a new ELS system, which will be more cost effective, more user friendly here. That actually will buy down. We've been able to negotiate the $3.50 online transaction cost to now it'll just be 3% of the total transaction, like a retailer is allowed to do right now. So in many cases, it'll be, rather than $3.50, it'll be 65 cents or something like that. So we're very proud of that. And then lastly here, Madam Chair, 9% of this departure or this expenditure, about $14.9 million, are for treaty payments that we do pay to the different bands throughout the state with the agreements that we have in place with them.
Representative, did you have a question? Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Meyer, I just regarding the public information customer service and the administration of license, and does that go to entities that are selling fishing licenses? Is this contained in here?
Madam Chair, Representative Purcell, this is the amount of money it takes to do the manuals, to run the system. all of the things that are involved with our printing of the labels, all of the stock materials. Our terminals cost about $1,000 per terminal to maintain, and right now we have about 1,600 of them out there. So maintaining that system, the programming, the operations of it, the public education and information that's there, it all comes out of this budgeting module.
But if I just quickly, I won't belabor it, but just a follow-up, Madam Chair, Commissioner Meyer, I've just recently received several inquiries in my district from long-time resort owners that are having their license capacity pulled for issuing fishing, and we'll be getting back to you on that. It's an issue.
Madam Chair, Representative Stahl, we appreciate that, and I will get back to you on that as well. We've gone from a high number of license terminals to a lower number of licensing terminals. To do that, we've evaluated the number of licensing sold. We're also providing an online licensing option as well, as I mentioned, but we want to try to figure out some kind of happy medium for those resorters that are selling not a ton of licenses, but they want to be able to provide that service. So it's a matter of, you know, some people want more than a dollar to charge these licenses. I got a lot of people who will do it, or the department has a lot of people who will do it for free. It's trying to figure out that effective distribution network that we have and how do we pay for it and maintain it. So I'm pulling together some background information. I'll make sure you get a copy of that. Madam Chair, moving on to ecological resources here. The FY 10-11 budget was about $49 million. There were some small reductions that occurred in the unallotment, $46,500 out of the $6,223 general fund. Again, this is salary savings through vacancies, general management reductions. And then we did the $800,000, Madam Chair, we've shifted our community assistance program from regional operations. This will be in the next sections here, to the Division of Ecological Resources and Waters. We are redesigning these two divisions to work more on a watershed basis. This will allow us the ability to coordinate and manage this work through that department, either the ecological side and the water side, providing the outreach to the citizens and the local units of government that they need to deal with these situations. We've reduced, redirected, I should say, $174,800 from field botany and ecology, reducing our endangered plant surveys and recovery activities, and also technical assistance related to prairie ecology and management, but still doing these opportunities and trying to figure out how do we do them more across the board.
I think this is the exact thing that Senator Fredrickson was worried about when you all proposed merging these two divisions, that the outcome of reducing endangered plant surveys and particularly the recovery activities is exactly what he was getting at. We'll have to have more discussions about that.
Madam Chair, and this is a chance. I need to give you more information on this whole area right here. So going into the total there, the non-game and rare resources, you can see we currently, one of the outcomes and indicator targets is managing our SNAs. Goal is to establish 5 new and 809 with the target of 157 by 10 and 160 by 2012. We're on track to meet those goals, I believe. We just need to make sure that we can continue with the acquisitions that we have on track. One new SNA will be designated recently, or was designated recently, and three or four more by the end of 10, which will put us on track to meet those targets. You can see the other outcomes, example indicators, number of acres protected and easements, prairie stewardship plans and management practices, and then a number of counties with county biological survey work. Completed seven in 2008, 2009. We have 74 counties done out of the 87, Madam Chair. We hope to complete that program in the coming years. As soon as possible. Moving on to the lakes and rivers side of things, it's about 14% of the budget. Aquatic plants, non-game fish, aquatic invertebrates, lake habitat protection. You can see some of the indicators here. Number of water bodies with current mussel data, for example, continuing that monitoring. designing and implementing 15 stream restorations or some of the outcomes associated with this, and also complete 70 near-shore habitat surveys on 15 Cass County lakes is what we completed that in 08-09. And 10, we're looking to do the assessments and have them completely delivered to Cass County Planning and Zoning. And we also deal with our aeration permits and APM permits out of this area, the IBI data collected, collected on 18 lakes throughout the first 6 months of 10. We're doing some of this work also with clean water, with the legacy funds that are there, Madam Chair, the IBI monitoring work that's just not broke out here. Watershed assessment tool, the development refining of that tool. Phase one is online and working to get the rest of that up, the watershed assessment tool online to make sure that we have that tool ready to go. Under ecosystem health, it's about 28% of the budget, $13.5 million. Invasive species, fish contaminants, our pathology lab is funded out of this program, natural resources damage and assessment program. You can see one of the things is in 2009 we've identified 12 more bodies of Eurasian water milfoil, water bodies that were identified. Initiated a new prevention grant program to help lake associations deal with this. FY9, there was $100,000 there for curly leaf pondweed Eurasian milfoil. 10, there are $69,000 in prevention grants and $700,000 in management grants that are there, aquatic plant management grants. These are that's matching grants for lake associations.
I don't think we need to talk about the money going out to people. It's the outcome, and the outcome is new infestations. And that's probably where we get our biggest, as legislators, our biggest complaints from citizens are the increase of invasive species. I mean, so that's not a good outcome.
Madam Chair, I agree. On one of the areas here is enforcement. We've talked about that a little bit. I know in the policy committee, we do have a proposal out there. We're hoping to move forward that would establish a criminal penalty for the moving of aquatic macrophytes or Eurasian milfoil, curly leaf pondweed, to help us deal with that threat. Just for the chair's information, a lot of our invasive species work is mostly general fund funded. So we're trying to maintain this with a funding source that does have a lot of pressures on it, Madam Chair.
Members, I think this is one of the things we're going to have to pay. I don't know whether you all have as much feedback on issues of invasive species as I do, but that does seem to be a general theme in the public. That they don't think we're doing enough to protect resources from invasive species.
Madam Chair, there's no other questions. I'm going to move on to page 14, talking about integrated conservation information. You can see, you know, the goal of this area is to deliver ecological data to local units of government to help them plan, develop, and permit. It represents about 20% of the budget. Our environmental review and wetlands information system is housed in this area. Education, information delivery, and planning and coordination. Environmental review is a little bit tricky because the EIS work that we do on that is contracted with the project itself. So, for example, when we are involved in a major EIS activity, there is a work agreement that is initiated and actually executed between ourselves and the project proposer that pays for all of those costs for that staff. You see, 08-09, we worked on 3 mining EIS projects and 16 EAWs for DNR and the private sector work. There's a lot of review work that we do for ourselves and other government units or other RGUs, responsible government units in this area, that are general fund funded.
Okay, if you could give us the cost to you of the EAWs, because that is general fund where an EIS is done by the party asking for the permit, and how much staff, I mean, you said staff reviewed a huge number of documents for a huge number of projects. How much of that is charged back to the project, and how much of that is general fund?
Madam Chair, we'll get back to you on that.
I think that's quickly.
Thank you. I believe we have that information. We'll get it to you rather quickly. Madam Chair, I'm going to move on to enforcement, page 15. And before I do get into this section, I just want to make sure that people understand we are working on this and trying to redefine the outcomes. It's rather tricky to look at enforcement where we're measuring actual hours of activity. And our enforcement work is driven by the funding source. So when there's boat water, when there's water wrecks, snowmobile, ATV, OHV, game and fish, those dollars and the percentages of those dollars drive our activities in the field. So one of the things that we have, the general fund activities that we have for enforcement, do things like wetland conservation enforcement work in other areas that are not state-owned, work.
What were the outcomes for wetlands this year?
Madam Chair, moving then I'll just let me just talk about that 800 through the unallotment here of the 2.89 general fund. 230 was unallotted each year from the division's general management appropriation, dealing with staffing and things like that. The first block there, you'll see Wetland Conservation Act. Our goal here, and we're still refining this, is provide environmental protection to the state's water and air through enforcement and education. The goal is to limit impacts of wetlands, impact to wetlands and protected waters. And is it by 10%? Is it by 50%? Is it by 100%? It's hard to put an actual number there, but to do that, we're saying by providing 9,000 hours of Wetland Conservation Act enforcement and 4,500 hours committed to water quality enforcement annually. In 2010, our efforts to date have resulted in preventing, ceasing, or restoring impacts to 118 protected waters and wetlands. This is on track with previous year's totals of 431 impacts that we've identified in 09 and 400 in FY08. But those all weren't violations. Those were areas that we identified impacts. We provided information to the local soil and water conservation or county attorney's office. And then they go on and do the investigation of this activity. Sometimes it's a permanent activity that's there. Many times it's not. We identify something that is a potential violation, and it results in the issuing of a cease and desist order or a restoration order to reverse that activity. It's about 7% of the enforcement operating budget there. Fisheries and game protection, this is 61% of the 10-11 budget. You can see fisheries enforcement, game enforcement, firearm safety and training. Again, the main goals are to ensure compliance with current regulations in order to maintain a high quality of fishing, hunting experiences. And then on the firearm safety side of things, to maintain our current number of students in firearm safety and continued efforts in reducing hunting-related injuries and fatalities through education with the goal of zero. That's the same for our boat water safety program. During the 09 hunting season, there was one fatal and 23 non-fatal hunting-related accidents. We're in the process of retooling this program to enhance our online component and make it a little bit easier for people to take this online and reduce the impacts, if you want to call it. To go to a firearm safety class, if you've ever taken your son or daughter there, it's a substantial commitment. 8 weeks of one or two nights a week, and then there's an all-day session. If you live in rural Minnesota, that could add to hours and hours and hours of driving. We're expanding this program so to allow youths to take it online, complete the test, and then we would meet them and mentor them for a day in the field at a local gun club or a shooting range to provide that one-on-one handling and safety experience that they need, focusing on not only firearms but also outdoor education and hunter safety. The water recreation I talked about is about 13% of the budget, about $8.5 million. Boat and water safety enforcement, public access enforcement management, grants to local communities, local enforcement communities for boat and water safety. And we talked a little bit about that. What the outcome was, we had over 22,000 hours of enforcement and education, and over $1 million in grants that provided to local law enforcement agencies, to basically county sheriff's departments. Public safety and service, Madam Chair, it's about 2%. The outcome here is to provide for public safety by assisting citizens in the state at times in need. Goals, flooding assistance, major disasters, fire, things of that nature. We're always there. That becomes our number one priority for the whole department, actually. And then lastly here, recreation enforcement and safety training. It's about 17% of the budget, and this is our ATV, OHM, off-road vehicle and snowmobile training. And it's with the goal of providing zero fatalities in that area. You can see this year has been a dangerous snowmobile season, partly because of the snow that we had and partly because people probably haven't been snowmobiling like they have for a while. But it is a huge safety concern for us and one that we need to maintain on all of our motorized and non-motorized and hunting activities. Moving on to operation support, Madam Chair. Again, this area is still in refinement for goals.
Oh, excuse me. Representative Scalzi has a question.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And back up to the wetland, the environmental protection. For a goal, for the outcome, I'm curious about when we say we have 9,000 hours of enforcement and then you hand it over to the county attorneys and the counties and they proceed. I guess I'm kind of questioning what happens. So to me, an outcome would be how many acres of wetlands restored or how many acres of wetlands that you identified that somebody was, say, draining or whatever. And because I would assume that the DNR has to be involved in the process all through the county process because you have to testify as to what you saw. I just would like to know how many acres of wetlands we're actually protecting or restoring, if that's possible.
Madam Chair, we can provide that. Representative Scalzi, we can provide that information. The thing that we're struggling with, and we're going to work with Mr. Reinholtz on this more, is what is that goal? Is it reducing that number to zero? It's just hard to come up with, and maybe it's just the way that we're looking at things. But we need to refine what that goal should be, and I will circle back with you and get your input on that as well, because it's just a matter of framing things a little bit differently, I think. But that's our goal as well, is to minimize that and make sure that the impacts we see, if they are illegal, are restored and functioning as a wetland again. So it's... I think we're on the same page. It's just a matter of terminology and how we phrase that goal.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Meyer, follow-up to that, if I may, and then I have another question in that same area, environmental protection. Is the primary wetland involvement, is that area recon? For DNR enforcement, that was one of the major areas that I understood from my SWCD days.
Madam Chair, Representative Purcells, we do a lot of flight work out of here, and again, when we are in the air, we're looking for potential impacts as well. We do some dedicated Wetland Conservation Act enforcement flying, but when we're in the air, we're looking for these things as well when we're doing other related work. So that is a big piece of it. Unfortunately, from the air, you can't tell. We'll take a GPS point. We'll transfer that down to our field staff. And then the investigation work needs to go. And is there a permit? What is going on the ground? I mean, that's the main way we find out about these things. Our neighbors call in or somebody sees something that somebody doing something they don't think they should be doing, something like that. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was my recollection was... SWCD get a call from Conservation Aerial Recon, and then SWCD would send somebody out perhaps to check it out too. That's a good multi-agency approach anyway. And the water quality aspect of that, Commissioner Meyer, maybe you said it and I missed it, but what is this? Does this involve invasive species, or are you talking erosion issues, or I'm just looking to hone in on that a little bit. What water quality protection issues? Other wetlands obviously have some impact there on water quality, but is there anything else there?
Madam Chair, Representative Purcells, it's all of that. If there's an issue of drainage or something like that going on, we'll become involved. Or if somebody calls us, it's Wetland Conservation Act, it's other laws that are out there, illegal runoff, things like that.
There's a whole gamut of water quality air impacts that are out there that we would work on.
And I see, Madam Chair, I see solid waste, so illegal dumping, et cetera, is something that you'd be involved with?
Madam Chair, Representative Purcells, yes, we receive a general fund appropriation and also an appropriation from the environmental fund to do those types of things. And that's one of the things we'll be talking about on Thursday when we present our budget to you.
Thanks.
All right, let's see if we can wrap this up, Madam Chair. Operation support, you can see it's $15 million. There were reductions that were taken here. And 10 and 11 are totaling $112,500. $10,000 savings from the commissioner's office budget. $9,500 was unallotted from regional operations. Moving our information officers into the central region support services budget there. These positions were reprogrammed. We've redesigned our information and education delivery system through our information officers statewide and reorganized that a little bit. There's also a $7,500 savings that were unallotted from vacant positions that were there. In the $800,000 reduction, $354,000 each year. The community assistance program was funded out of this area, and that has been shifted to, it will be shifted to the Ecological Waters Resources Division through our shared services programs, because that's where we really need to enforce these opportunities, making sure that we're providing the community, the local communities, the assistance that they need, but also making sure they're aware of the impact of their decisions as well, and how their decision-making impacts a lot of other things. So our community assistance program is one that we need to make sure that we continue and actually work more in the 11 county area than we have been in the past, because it's that education and assistance piece, making sure that people understand the impacts of their decisions at the local level is really where we're going to gain a lot of benefit environmentally. So moving on to the remainder of the budget, central operations support, it's about 49% of this section here. It includes our communications, the commissioner's office, our OMB, our direct budget and accounting policy for effective use of all of our oversight, auditing capabilities that we have, auditing staff, federal boat and water safety, and then the conservation volunteer. The volunteers run strictly on donations, so that's not really a general fund piece of this, but this is the total appropriation. You can see the outcomes that we have here is strategic departmental direction to address our critical trends that we're working on and identifying outdoor recreation participation, energy and climate, and then landscape changes from growth and development that we continue talking about. The boat and water safety program that comes out of here is coordinated. We've talked a little bit about that through enforcement, but the grants that we have are distributed through here, and the conservation volunteer. Our regional operations support is about $5.9 million out of this budget, and that's for all of our regional management activities, our regional directors, their staff and support staff out in the areas. One of the things we're tracking is the 255,000 acres of undeveloped natural land, which within the 7-county metro area, it's a goal or an outcome of ours to protect that as much as possible. 68% of those lands are still remaining in natural state. We want to try to maintain those as much as possible. Looking at the number of acres of habitat that are there, coordination of natural resource management programs, technical assistance to local communities, stakeholders, and elected officials. This is where our one-on-one interaction with county governments, local units of government occur. Administration of financial assistance program, information and education. Our emergency response coordination activities are ran out of our regional offices. Problem resolution and partnering with local units of government.
Madam Chair.
This is primarily for committee members. This is not an area to forget about. The relationship between the central operations and regional operations and the way in which this department interacts with local units of government both appointed and elected officials. As you know, some of you know, I have an issue. And I've concluded, after all this time, that the department is simply not organized or managed to seriously offer a coordinated body of technical assistance to local people to solve local problems. I believe there's conflict between regional operations and central operations. I believe there's conflict between different missions, different directors, different sections within the department, which has brought me to the conclusion that the department cannot function in an interagency way. The department cannot function in an intergovernmental relations way if it cannot function internally within itself. And I'm talking about an issue. Mr. Meyer is painfully aware of it. It involves the whole gamut of issues, from ecological, economic development, public safety, fisheries, hydrology, water resources, the whole arena. And so I just want committee members to be aware that this is an area that requires certainly management within the agency and the executive branch, but certainly some probing, oversight, and questioning by this committee.
Representative, would you want to share what you're talking about specifically, or not? You don't have to, but it would help us focus, perhaps.
Reluctantly, Madam Chair, reluctantly, I would share with you, this has to do with a bonding project approved in 8, not an insignificant bonding appropriation. It's $3.5 million. And it requires the dewatering of a vacated open iron ore mining pit adjacent to communities. And when you add Representative Solberg's time, when he represented this problem, to mine, we are approaching 15 years of admiring a problem. I have no... It's not with any malice or any anger or anything that I share this with you, but I would not want this kind of a problem to affect you and your constituents, as it has affected mine. It is clearly one of the worst examples of government incompetence that I know of. And so I'll leave it at that. It's called the Canisteo Dewatering Project.
Mr. Chair, if I could just present. I remember going up there on the bonding tour when we recommended that money go in. And I think people were concerned getting the money, that it was a public safety issue. And that was the first concern, even though it would go to DNR. That is my...
Well, Madam Chair, as I said, it's multiple pieces, moving pieces, complex, but I raise it primarily because It is an extremely frustrating manner for elected and appointed local officials in counties and municipalities. And I wouldn't want you to have to go through a similar exercise.
Madam Chair, this is, conflict is exactly right, Representative Ancels. This is where our conflict is managed, at our regional level, working with our regional directors and our regional staff to help deal with those three intersecting circles, the recreation, the economic development, and the environmental protection. This has been a difficult project. It involves moving water out of an open pit into a local watershed across private people's land, and it was a $3.5 million appropriation that once this is established, the state, the department, will have to own and operate. So part of the complexities is dealing with not only that aspect, making sure what's designed we can manage, especially when we're taking millions and millions of dollars out of this department and out of state government in general, but working with, as Representative Ancels said, a large group of local officials from a broad area. I mean, we've designed plans. Actually, we just sent a letter telling them we want to move forward securing easements on their route that they want to do. But at the same time, we're going to try to secure a different route that we've been looking at that we might be able to operate and manage a little bit more effectively. But it's working with those local units of government and having those difficult decisions and coming up with solutions is exactly what we do. I mean, I think we all know the department is not without conflict. I mean, we deal with conflict across our regions, across our divisions on a daily basis. But it's managing that conflict to a successful resolution is the outcome. And that's where I think we do a really good job. Representative Ancels, I know we've had our days. We all have our days with each other, but I think in the end of the day, this project will get done. The letter we just sent last week said we want to start construction this season, this spring. We're going to start securing easements, start securing options on another alternative, but we want to move dirt this spring. We want to get the water out of those houses. It's coming up with an agreement, a plan that both sides can agree with that minimize the environmental impacts is what we have to do as a Department of Natural Resources. So I appreciate your comments, Representative Ancels. I think it represents what we do on a daily basis in the regions. Our regional directors, I think I have a tough time here sometimes. They have it just as tough out there with dealing with the broad array of issues that are out there. But it's dealing with the conflict in an effective and a proactive manner that makes our relationship stronger in the end out there. And this is where those activities come from. So.
Representative Scalzi.
No, pass.
All right. Any other questions for? I don't see any other questions. I think we're going to give you some peace. We will be seeing you again shortly with budget cuts. Hopefully, some of the comments. While Bowser's coming up, somebody's going to move the minutes of.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes be approved for February 18, 2010.
Since we have a quorum, the minutes have been moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? The minutes are adopted. Thank you. Members, we are going to give you more time. Would you be available tonight, or should we be scheduling you tomorrow? Next week,
whichever you prefer.
Well, I prefer to get finished this up.
Okay, that works for me.
Okay, all right. These always take longer than we think, but that's because we have an engaged committee, and that is a good thing, not a bad thing. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Julie Blackburn. I am the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. And for our limited 10 minutes left here, I'm not sure the approach you would like me to take. If you want me just to start from the beginning?
Just start.
Okay. My plan for the presentation to the committee is to really talk about those programs right now that are general fund. That seems to be one of the major issues that we're needing to deal with right now. So what's coming around, I'm not even going to bother to put it on the TV for the 10 minutes, is our updated spreadsheet. And similar to DNR and PCA, this is what we consider a work in progress. It's certainly not perfect yet, but we are working on continuing to develop our outcomes and key measures and working to get better at that. So I just want to start out, first of all, by letting you know that the biennial budget that we're presenting here includes the $1 million cut that we had to our general, to our administrative fund for this year, as well as the $2.8 million cut that we had for our grant pass-through programs in this budget year, in this biennium year, compared to 2008 and 9. We did not have any unallotments because we had received a 10.8% budget reduction already for this biennium. We did not have any unallotments. We still were needing to work in our 3.8 million dollar reduction. So just to start out with our goals, if you remember from last time, our goals, number one, is to preserve and protect soil and water resources. And I'm going to start out with the cost share program, our conservation cost share program. There are a couple of different parts to that. One of them is our general cost share, and that's $2.2 million. That's distributed to the 91 soil and water conservation districts through a formula basis. The remaining funds, including weed management, native buffers, and feedlots, are put out on a competitive basis. The competitive funds just went out and were just approved by our board January 28th. They went out, they were all rolled into one package with the clean water funds, so we didn't have to put LGUs through a competitive process several times in the same year. The way that these funds go out, there's a two-year contract, and they have then 2 years to continue to implement the funds. So what we're reporting right now is the grants that went out in 2006. 2006 is when we had a $6.5 million allocation for the cost share program. Now we're down to 5.2. So we would anticipate seeing the same kind of results with our current allocation, obviously in the percentage decrease, the same percent that we had had from our the amount of funding available. In 2006, we know that we leveraged at least $1 per dollar for the cost share program. One of our key measures is the amount of funding leveraged. And you'll see that for 2006, for our general cost share, we had $2.065 million leveraged $2.5 million in local contribution, federal contribution, and the landowner contribution. One of the other things that we're measuring then is what actually happens on the ground with these practices. For 2006, there was about 1,200 practices that were put on the ground. 16,000 linear feet of shoreline and stream banks were restored. 550,000 linear feet of shelter belts, which is a great program to stop wind erosion. Representative Purcell up in your area, that's definitely a big program. From those, we also look at the amount of soil contribution, phosphorus contribution that was eliminated from going into waters, and we know that nearly 17 tons of sediment and over or almost 18,000 pounds of phosphorus were eliminated from going into the streams. The cooperative weed management program, it's a very small allocation, but quite honestly, I just believe it's a tremendous program because it does unite so many groups dealing in a geographic area rather than on property lines. That's only $200,000 per biennium, and already, even though this is new, they've treated almost 5,000 acres of invasive species through their cooperative efforts. The native buffer program, there was $1.8 million this year for that program, and even though the grants, they don't have to report until the end of their grant period, many LGUs do report as the money is spent. We know that there's only about 20% of the native buffer program that has been actually recorded on our e-link system, and already we've had over 1,200 acres of native vegetation put in, 6,000 linear feet of shoreline buffers along with that. So that's a program that's really going very strong. Going down to drainage management, our drainage management, we only have $200,000 available in the biennium that go out to grants to LGUs for drainage records modernization. And the general fund pays for the administrative portion of this project, which we have several people who work on that, and it accumulates to one full-time employee. They do manage the drainage work group, the intermanagement, the interagency drainage management team, and do that buffer reporting. And I have some of the new statistics on the buffer reporting from the drainage authorities on there. You'll see that I wrote in italics that we are proposing that for the 2011, in order to meet our reduction goals, that the 100,000 pass-through grants for drainage records modernization is eliminated in 2011.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Blackburn, it seems like both the cost share and the drainage management, those are grants to local governments. So when you have cuts to local government aid at the county level, and then here are the districts and the counties that work on drainage, or whether they're doing cost shares, this is another cut to local government aid, just a different type of cut. Would that be correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, that is correct. All, you know, the majority, well over 80% of our budget is a pass-through to local units of government for their work. What our strategy has been, because of the combination with local government aid cuts, county government cuts, is to try to reduce the amount of impact to the technical services staff that are available to get conservation on the ground. What that forces them to do, unfortunately, is to try to find funds through competitive processes elsewhere, whether it's Clean Water Partnership or 319 that are offered through the MPCA or our Clean Water Funds. So we've tried to keep as much of the staffing in place so that they can continue to do conservation. But yes, in effect, this is a cut to the local units of government. On the top of page 2, there's some more information there about our drainage management, about the grants that have gone out. We have 46 grants that have gone out for the drainage records modernization program. One of the reasons that program is very important is because we believe that digitizing all the information about drainage will provide for better surface water management, essentially. I'm not going to talk about RIM unless there's any questions, since that's bonding, and I think most of you are pretty familiar with the RIM program from the earlier presentation we did last month. Going down to the Wetland Conservation Act, the Wetland Conservation Act is a huge component of our agency. It is implemented at the local level, although we do serve on TEP committees, the technical evaluation panels. We are the ones that do the rule updates, all of the guidance on the rules, provide the technical assistance. We have the dispute resolution committee where the appeals, final appeals come to, and we provide oversight over all of the reporting of these programs. On page 3, you'll see that there's the 11 county metro enforcement grants and the DNR wetland violation enforcement. Those were added from what we did last year. Those are grant programs and pass-through funding programs. It's $200,000 each for the biennium. We are recommending that for 2011, both of them are eliminated, so it would be a total elimination of $200,000 out of 2011.
Okay. We're going to have Representative Hansen. Did you have a question?
Yes.
And this will be our last question.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Blackburn, when you come back tonight, could you give us some numbers on what we're talking about here? Because in the indicators and key measures, it talks about improvement and tracking and monitoring and significant component, but could we actually see the numbers? And then I think you alluded to the buffer. You might have some buffer numbers for us too, but if we could get a little more detail so we get some context of what you're actually talking about here.
Absolutely.
Okay. Members, we are going to recess and reconvene at 6:30 tonight. We are going to finish Bowser, finish
and start then with PCA's budget reductions. So we are going to hear their proposed reductions the governor's proposed reductions tonight, and then we will do DNR and Bowser's proposed reductions. We're looking at past reductions, we're going to look at the future ones, and that's going to be our agenda. With that, the committee is in recess until 6:30 tonight. Recess and adjourn. So,
Blackburn, welcome. Again, reconvening the committee.
What I would like for you to do is highlight only your outcomes that for the money. I mean, that is actually what we are looking at, because when we do cuts, we are going to be looking at what outcomes will be lost. And if there are no outcomes, then nothing is lost. So that's why we're listening for outcomes. And members, after we Bowser finishes their presentation, Jim Reinholz is going to go over the governor's proposed budget for this committee. I have already, and I probably you all have already heard from some folks too, that feel it's very unfair that the governor is proposing to raid some funds like, well, we'll hear from our fiscal analyst who knows all here. And then after that, we will hear from PCA and their proposed budget cuts and what the results of those cuts will be. Big into results tonight.
Okay, Madam Chair, Julie Blackburn, Assistant Director for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. If it's okay with you, the formatting when I put it up on the screen did not work out. Is it okay if I do not put it on the... Okay. And where we left off was talking about the WACA component on page 3. I did hand out a slightly revised, not major revision, but there is a I did make some slight revisions to the copy that was just handed out. When we left here at 10 o'clock this morning, we were talking about the 11 county metro enforcement grants and the DNR wetland violation enforcement funds. Is that where you want me to start, or did you want me? Okay. So the outcomes for the 11 county metro enforcement grants, we have no outcomes that have been reported to us from this project yet. We do know that it's been difficult for the metro area local units of government to spend this money because it is so specific as to what it can be used for, and they have not been able to plan for additional staffing to handle that. So it isn't a very smooth fit for the increased enforcement effort in the metro area. We have not received
Excuse me for a minute. Representative Hanson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blackburn, so we just didn't do it?
Madam Chair and Representative Hanson, the grants, they actually don't have to report yet on the grant outcomes from the appropriation as it was, but we have heard the anecdotal evidence that and comments made directly to our metro area region manager that it is a difficult, it's a difficult program to implement through a grant. All of the counties received a minimum of $5,000, and then the additional funds were based on the previous 4 years' enforcement. However, it can only be used when there are major violations. And in the last year or two, the major violations have significantly decreased. So when they can only access that fund when that major violation happens.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blackburn, so I thought part of this was involving the DNR doing increased flyovers. Did that not occur?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, in the past, we do know that the DNR had their Operation Bird's Eye View. We have not received a report overall as far as their plans of what they plan to do as outcomes for this pass-through grant funding.
Madam Chair, but I thought we provided this in the money was provided in 07, right? So 07, 08, 09, 10. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what's happened.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, we have received an overall report from the DNR on overall wetland enforcement activities. We have not had it specified for what happened with this $100,000 per year pass-through.
Madam Chair, I think we'll probably need to have DNR back.
Yes, they will be coming back to talk to us Thursday because we are starting tonight with PCA looking at the proposed governor's cuts and the results that the agencies have been getting that will be cut. So that's our next three hearings, and then right after that, we will hear from the public. We'll have a marathon hearing of people who want to talk about proposed cuts and what impact it might have on them. So that's our schedule.
Madam Chair, maybe Ms. Blackburn, when we provided the additional dollars, I think we also provided an additional two with administrative penalty authority. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And there was time spent to try to get that working. What's happened with that in relation to the WACA grants with administrative penalty authority?
It took us, Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, we did develop our system for implementing the administrative penalty orders on wetland enforcement actions. We have not found an appropriate case that this could be used for. The amount of restoration orders that are appealed that we have to continue to enforce have gone down. And in order for it to be brought to that level, the rest of the record, the rest of the options for enforcement should be exhausted at that point. And we have not had a case where we've needed to do that.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blackburn, has there been any evidence or anecdotal evidence of local governments being, say, a county attorney unwilling to move forward just because of resources or on any of these violations?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, I am not aware of any of that information that we have, but we can certainly report back on that.
We'll be seeing you next week, so that you could do that at that time.
Okay, then continuing on page 3, I am not going to talk about the wetland banking program or the targeting and prioritization since they are not funded through our general funds, unless there's any questions on those.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Ms. Blackburn, on the wetland banking, what's the administrative rate in terms of a wetland dollar for banking credits that you may receive through bonding or any other project? What's the administrative dollar that can be spent or provided to either the agency or the local unit of government?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, wetland banking, the cost to implement that program is 17% of the overall cost of the program.
Okay.
Okay, and then going on to the top of page 4, local water management planning. This is all of our activities that our board conservation is working out with local units of government to make sure that they have a up-to-date comprehensive local water management plan for counties, watershed districts, and water management organizations. We also included in this those grants that go out to those local boards. They are passed through, but we do approve work plans for that work to get done, and they are based on local plans. So our contribution as far as our administrative budget is 2.5 full-time employees. That's what we estimate all of our board conservation staff to be to that. And then we have $180,000 over the biennium for the Red River Board, $180,000 over the biennium for the Minnesota River Board, and $260,000 over the biennium for Area 2. Our outcomes on this, our goal are that we have 100% up-to-date plans, or at least 95% are up-to-date. Currently, we do have 3% of our water plans that are out of date, 28% of watershed district plans, and 11% of water management organization plans are out of date. Some of them more than 3 years. We do know already that there are 6 that are planned to be heard and approved in the next several months, so we are going to make some way on that. The water management plans really are the way that all those local units of government target their efforts. So our measurable outcome on this is making sure that all of those other funding opportunities that they are eligible for have outlined the best way to do conservation, the right place, the right best management practice to get the best environmental outcome.
Let me ask a question about that for management plans. How much of that involves understanding groundwater implications, or is it just surface water?
Madam Chair, there is a whole series of questions that they should that are put before all of the local management organizations when they're going through their planning. The amount of energy or attention brought to groundwater is kind of dependent on that area. Obviously, in the southeast, it's a major concern. There's almost no difference between groundwater and surface water. In areas of the Anoka Sand Plain, groundwater is a major concern. And so it can be to a greater or lesser degree. It is always part of a plan, and it can involve both quantity and quality as well.
From the last hearing when we were sitting here in environment, it was interesting about how little concern there was about groundwater protection. There were a lot of other agendas, but that was not one.
Madam Chair, when I was out doing the listening sessions along with the University of Minnesota, I was the one that, from the Bowser staff, that did the southeast area. And the amount of attention that was put to groundwater there, was so extensive. It was part of every conversation. And it was really good for me to get out and start listening to that a little bit more to see how in-depth it is in many of those water plans. It's a major component.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blackburn, on the 3 small boards, how do those appropriations work? Are they all one lump sum, or are there any of those funds that are currently held by the agency yet to go out to the 3 boards?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, the Area 2 and Minnesota River Board have been encumbered, obligated, and are out the door based on an approved work plan. The Minnesota River Basin submitted their work plan last week. It has been approved, so that paperwork's going through, but it actually, the money hasn't been transferred over to them yet. Okay, the rest of the page, on page 4, is the Clean Water Fund. I'm not going to go over any of that. We do have our report that is due on March 1st, our first legislative report on the Clean Water Fund, and so we'd like to come back and talk to you about that at that point. Not going to cover it here. On the top of page 5, you'll see goal 3, and that is to maintain an effective and efficient local delivery system. The first couple of line items here are for the assistance out to local units of government. The first one is the Natural Resource Block Grant. The block grant is a composite of base grants that go out to counties and only counties to implement state-mandated programs such as the local water management planning, the DNR shoreland management program, MPCA feedlot program, SSTS program. Counties must have that adopted local water management plan that I just covered. And that program for the biennium is $7,800,000. So as far as the measurable outcomes on those, it is continuing for those counties to be able to implement those state-mandated programs and activities. They do report back as far as the required match. They report back as far as the feedlots, what they're doing in feedlot activities. And the WACA, they're required to report if they're getting a WACA portion of the NRBG grant. They are required to report every year about what their activities are. We just started a whole new reporting program on that last year. Unfortunately, I don't have any of the results from that new reporting program for you right now. The person who administers that database is out on a medical leave, and we expect to be able to get that information very shortly. So that's the NRBG block grant that is administered by Bowser. The next one is the general services grant. This is funding that goes out to every SWCD. It is operational funds in order for them to continue to do their work. This is the state's component. SWCDs currently get about 30 to 40% of their funding from the state, 30 to 40% from the county, and then the rest is self-generated revenue. It is keeping in place those 300-some technicians, office administrators, water quality monitoring folks to go out there and do the work of conservation. So it is the state's contribution to that local effort. The Performance Review and Assistance Program, that was put into statutes in 2007. The funding from that is actually return on our cost share funds. We're allowed to use up to $150,000 per year from returned cost share funds in order to conduct this activity. We have some very good measurable goals and outcomes from this program. This program has resulted in a lot of good information coming out there about the organizational capacity and performance that of all of the local units of government that we're working on. We have in-depth level two interactive reviews with 8 to 10 local units of government per year. We've decreased the hours that it takes to do that, both on the local unit of government standpoint and ours, significantly. What happens with this is that we're really able to identify at a very early stage when there might be some issues going on with that local unit of government as far as capacity, technical knowledge, any of those issues that might result in less implementation on the ground. So we're able to get out there and address it early. We also have, along with that, some measurable outcomes that we review through our Performance Review and Assistance Program. Are they meeting all their reporting requirements, their audit requirements, submitting their annual activity reports, was really checking in on our local units of government. And just so you know, we also included in this year, we got a searchable database on our website. So anybody can go in at any point and make sure, look at their local unit of government and make sure that they've met all the standards. So that's new to our website this year. On the top of page 6 is the training and certification program. We recently hired through the Clean Water Fund somebody that will be our training program coordinator, but we did have a significant training effort in place already. Although now what we're looking at is it being a comprehensive program where we can tie training to outcomes and make sure that the results that are being reported are accurate, all of the BMPs are installed correctly, and that we have more determined outcomes. We have a Bowser Academy. This is our third year. Last year in 2009, we had over 240 participants that came to learn everything about how we calculate pollutant reductions from projects, learning about new infiltration standards, learning about things like the Rural Preserves Property Tax Program. We also have our wetland conservation training program through the University of Minnesota. Last year we had 39 courses, 51 days of training, and over 1,500 students that got certified in wetland delineation type programs. Our goals continue to be the same, although there's a slight reduction in the amount of courses we're offering because the rule is now out for the second year. Goal number four, we also have to evaluate and communicate the effectiveness of all of these programs. One of the things we do with that with our board conservationists that's paid for out of our general fund administratively is we make sure that we have grant closeouts and compliance to all grant procedures. One of the things that we do is we verify the match of NRBG grants. We can tell you that in 2008 and 2009, all of our match verification was met. If they do not meet all of the policy requirements or program requirements for cost share NRBG, things like that, there are penalties in place for that. E-Link, you're probably familiar with E-Link. It is kind of the entire management system of how our grant funds go out as well as how all of the activities are reported. And we look to continue to increase the effectiveness of that program. Our landscape implementation indicators, we have not had funding for that. We continue to seek funding to do some of these special programs that evaluate the health of the land, which we do continue to believe is the leading indicator of what's going to happen with water quality. Providing for transparent accountability and reporting of conservation outcomes, we have redone our website. It was just launched, turned on October 1st. We're doing things in there like documenting the LGU success stories. We have a project of the month that's highlighted now. People are very proud of that. All of our information is continually up to date. We have that public query site for conservation for mapping out all of the RIM WRP sites. And now we have that PRAP searchable database as well. We have an interactive mapping feature for other things besides RIM as well. Goal number five at the top of page seven is our easement inspections. The RIM easement inspections, this is a portion of the general services grant that is put over to the counties based on the number of easements that they have. Currently, they're paid $70 per easement to go out and inspect the easements. In 2009, SWCDs performed almost 2,500 inspections. That's about 48% of all of the RIM easements that are out there. Only 4% were not in compliance. Most typically it's things like they didn't mark the boundary correctly. There might be a road that was cut in too far. There's all kinds of things like that that most are very easily taken care of. Wetland bank monitoring and compliance. This is a requirement of the federal government as well as our rule. We have a really strong program in this area. Since its inception in 1994, we now have almost 280 wetland bank sites, a little over 12,000 acres. From the beginning of this monitoring program, we've inspected 145 sites, over 3,000 acres. We do follow up with people when we find, again, that they don't have maybe the boundary marked, the conservation area marked, or they're somehow out of compliance. In 2010, we are going to be monitoring 10 more of the road bank sites and about 60 to 75 of the private bank sites that are in the metro area and south central Minnesota. When we go out and do this, we contract with some of the local universities to get some interns to go out and help us, trains them, gets us out there just in that peak season as well. We also, under Goal 6, continue to support the State Soils Office. That's a partnership with the University of Minnesota. We have a office on site there, and continue to support the Southeast Flood Response, which will be winding down in the next year or so. And then the last thing is our central and regional operations support. We have 16 full-time employees We do currently have vacancies that we plan on not filling, and I think that's probably one of the things that we'll talk about as far as the reductions that are coming up. So that's a summary of those things that are the outcomes for those that are general fund activities.
Well, we will be looking forward to the March 1, is it March 1?
Which is a Sunday.
We won't do it on March 1, but we will be doing it shortly thereafter. Pardon? Shortly, yeah. All right. Any questions? Representative Hanson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blackburn, this morning you alluded to, I think, on the ditch buffer data that you might have something for us tonight. I don't know, or were you waiting till next week?
I was waiting till next week. I'm sorry. Madam Chair and Representative Hanson, Al was not in the office today, and I was not able to follow up with him.
Okay.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. You might want to just hear an analysis of the governor's proposal for Mr. Reinholz, who is now going to talk to us.
Madam Chair, committee members, there should be a one-page handout that I put together that really, it's a high-level summary, actually, of the governor's, just to get an overall picture of what's happening in the governor's budget to the environment and natural resources area. We're hearing from the agencies on details. This is sort of the big picture for the area. The way I have it formatted for you, if you look at it, the top portion, it shows general fund expenditure changes. A by agency, with the exception of DNR, is broken out between the changes, and then PILT has its own line there. The first column is really what we normally refer to as the base funding. It was the amount of general fund dollars forecasted to be spent by those agencies for the 10 and 11 biennium, so you have some context to put those cuts into. Then moving over into the next four columns, the summary of the governor's change recommendations. And just to do an example, so you're reading how that I have this laid out, if you look at the Pollution Control Agency, the first column shows that their general fund budget for the 2 years is $20,733,000. The governor is recommending to cut $276,000 out in 2010, $455,000 reduction in 2011, and you see the total of those two then is $731,000. The change percentage is just taking the how big of a reduction is the $731,000 out of the total $20,733,000, and in their case you can see it's a reduction of 3.5% of their general fund appropriation for the biennium. That is kind of runs the same on all the agencies. You can see what their total reduction is in the governor's recommendation. We'll hear details as the agencies come up and present their details. I'll also have a summary out to you with some details. I'm still kind of putting the finishing touches on that. You'll see, so you look at that in total and you see subtotal expenditure changes. The governor's budget is recommending in 2010 $1,616,000 worth of expenditure changes. In 2011, $4,107,000 for a total of $5,723,000 worth of reductions to the agencies. As in the percentage is a 2.3% reduction of their forecasted base. That's talking about appropriation changes, and the way I put this together to highlight the general fund revenue changes that are going on in this governor's in the governor's recommendations this time. This is is rather unusual, not and unique in the situation in what he's presented here. And what you see down there then are proposed transfers that the governor has made from various funds into the general fund. The first one, just for an example, is that the PCA, the governor is recommending that money be transferred from the environmental fund to the general fund, and in the first year he's recommending $1,566,000, in the second year $1,863,000, total $3,429,000. In most, then I also showed transfers from PCA out of the remediation fund, the special revenue fund, the natural resources fund transfers. In the DNR, the governor's recommending a transfer out of the game and fish fund to the general fund. Out of DNR special revenue, and at Bowser, a transfer from the special revenue funds at the amounts listed there. What's going on in most of these, you can't see the detail here, but what the governor's recommending, for example, in the DNR transfer from the natural resources fund, the governor's recommending that various appropriations be reduced in the agency, and then those dollars transferred to the general fund. The one you probably admit that seems to be drawing a lot of attention is the governor recommends a reduction of $260,000+ from the snowmobile account in the natural resources fund and transferring that money to the general fund. I'm talking about all these transfers and cuts, and what really comes out in all these transfers is in that instance you're using snowmobile registration money to pay for general fund activities. You can pick what you want. It could be K-12, it could be nursing home care, it could be tax credits, any of those items, but this adds up to $8 million in the environment budget that the governor is recommending being transferred from basically fee or license paying accounts to the general fund. That's unusual. That's why I spent quite a bit of time pointing that out to you. You can see the bottom, the net gate is a reduction in spending to the general fund of $13,768,000. That's arrived at by the cuts, and then when you add money to the general fund, it's equivalent to a cut, so it's a net savings to the fund. That's $13 million. It's a little complicated, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, and obviously we'll be getting more detail from agencies, Madam Chair.
Yes, I think this is a good time to discuss this and to really understand it, because it's this sheet that we will be using to kind of our general operations, and until, of course, we get our target, which may be a lot greater than this. I can't imagine it will be less, but, you know, weirder things have happened. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is maybe a question for Mr. Reinholtz. And all these funds, they're all fee-based funds and dedicated funds. Is there money usually sitting in there after the biennium? Do we usually appropriate all that money, or does it depend on the fund?
Madam Chair, Representative, there is often money on the bottom line of the funds for two reasons. One, for cash flow purposes, there is some money. There's usually not much money on the bottom line of any of these funds. I do have that information. I can show it. And for one example, the environmental fund actually is projected to be in the red, I believe, by 2013 at our current level of spending. So some of those funds going out through the years that we track are actually in the red already. That's probably why in most of the governor's recommendations, he's not just moving bottom line fund balances, he's making reductions in the agency in order to have available dollars to transfer.
And some of those will be made up in the environmental fund, and I'm sure we'll hear from PCA about that, but the way I see it is there's money in the bonding bill for landfill cleanup. So if the remediation fund here is money is going from remediation fund into the general fund, and now we're asking to bond for remediation. So that was my quick look at this, but we may hear differently from PCA, but that's my quick look at it. Did you have a question?
I'll go ahead if you.
Oh, Representative Anderson, then Representative Lilly. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I know one of the chairs in one of the committees that I served on said that next week he'll be getting the targets for his committee. Is that the same for you then, too?
I'm sure we'll all get them at the same time.
Okay, so next week then.
I don't know. I haven't been told.
Okay.
So I don't know. But they all do, they all usually come right up at the same time. Representative Willard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the other committees I serve on is Mary Murphy's committee, the Outdoor Heritage Committee. And we had a situation where we're getting a bunch of emails on this, on the issue with Lessard Sam's kind of thing. And we were kind of called raiders of the money and all this stuff. So let me get this straight. So if you're saying, like, on the snowmobile fund, I mean, wouldn't we kind of be susceptible to that same sort of thing if we're to touch that money? I mean, wasn't the intent when people pay that fee that would go to trail enhancement and trail improvements, trail, you know, for the snowmobile users? So if we're to pay for schools, which I love schools and support them, but so how do we, wouldn't that be kind of problematic for us, wouldn't you think? Or I don't know if that's a fiscal question or... But you can give it a shot.
Madam Chair, I would answer, and Representative Lilly, I'd answer that, and as the Chair alluded, there will be a public input day, and I doubt very much there will be any license payers or fee payers that would support taking their license dollars or fee dollars that they pay with the intention they be used for that activity and sending it to the general fund. Is it legal? In this case, the legislature can do that with these funds, I would say. With the Lessard Sams, there gets to be trouble with that. That's constitutionally dedicated funds, so it becomes a little bit more complicated in that area. But it certainly is possible to do this. I don't think anybody that pays the fees would be in support of it.
Madam Chair, and just members, the other day I was on the House floor, and a fellow representative, Representative Saylor, came up to me with a proposal for a fee increase on cross-country skiing. You know, people pay to get a trail pass and such, and boy, I think we're really, and I actually signed on thinking, because the money will go towards trail enhancement and improvement, and boy, that would be really a bad one, I think, for us if we're going down this course. So,
well, these, of course, are the governor's recommendations, and we will only have a bottom line to meet. We will not have to follow the governor's specific recommendations, but we will have a bottom line to meet. It's going to be very difficult. I can tell already. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe following up on Representative Lilly, I get some emails too about, but they're a little different. They say cut spending, you know. And Mr. Reinholz, this looks like almost twice as much, or more than twice as much, are not from cutting spending. So the public doesn't see the impacts of cutting spending. They see money being taken from dedicated accounts. And unless they're in that interest group, they may not see that, or they're the users who pay those fees. So you don't have the governor's not presenting an all-cutting spending. He's proposing a shift, a massive shift from dedicated funds, not a spending cut plan.
Mr. Reinholz, one of the things we don't have on here, and we probably won't have a good number until the March forecast, but there is a projected general fund deficit coming up in the next biennium. Do you recall what it is?
Madam Chair, no, I don't. It's right now, and I don't have that with me. There is definitely, in the forecast and under the governor's recommended budget, in excess of $2 billion of deficit in 12 and 11, yes.
So if we were to just take the money out
of these funds. There is no money to replenish them, that is for sure. And if that is the pattern we set, it seems to me that's what we have to do all over again next year. So, thinking about running for re-election, folks, because that's what we'll have to do next year. That's what I'm thinking. So, our alternative, of course, is just to make all general fund cuts, or recommendations for cuts to the Finance Committee. And so, that's, I have asked Ms. Hallbeck and Bob Meyer if they would give us alternative cuts that may be difficult since they are representing the governor's budget and advocating for these particular cuts, so we may have to just choose to do it ourselves, but some guidance would be immensely helpful in doing all general fund cuts, because I have to imagine that that's where we'll end up. That's, unless somebody wants to protest that right now, that's certainly what I'm thinking about. Any protest? I don't see any protests, so I imagine that's what's going to happen. All right. With that uninspirational, where do we go from here? We do welcome you, and we're glad you're here to help us through this.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, I'm Myrna Hallbeck, Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The pages are providing three documents to you. And I'll use those documents throughout the meeting, but for the most part, those documents provide you more detail behind what I'm going to show you on the slides. And then we certainly can look at any of those areas in more detail as you're perusing them or a question comes up. But generally, I try to provide those for you so that you understand the impacts, where the reductions are coming from in the appropriations, and then a spreadsheet very detailed on the general fund, which I think Mr. Reinholz and I will be working on to simplify, but at least at this moment it's very detailed. So if you want to understand where our budget is in the general fund, you can see it there as of December 15th.
This is a very helpful place to start. You might simplify it later, but this is extremely helpful, so I appreciate your attention to this.
So with that, what I intended to do today was provide you kind of a background, the fiscal year 09 unallotments and reductions that occurred, and kind of the impacts, the governor's budget. Just a quick refresher on the guiding principles. We talked about those last week. Then how we're going to be managing the reductions to do, and then, Madam Chair, I did provide some detail on the general fund, what's in the general fund, and then how we as an agency, if we were only making the reductions from the general fund, how we might prioritize those, at least as a starting point for you and the committee to think about reductions. So that's how I intend to go through to do it. Again, just recalling that as of January 2009, in the fiscal year, we had an unallotment of $1.4 million. And again, the document that looks like this and has the black and white symbol on it will give you a little bit more detail on kind of what we reduced with that. For the most part in that, we were able to move back to the general fund older Clean Water Partnership dollars and Clean Water Legacy dollars that were once allocated to projects but the projects did not need them. It freed the money up, but we did not have enough time left in that fiscal year in the biennium to actually give the money back out and have the projects completed. So it was not a reduction to anyone's project while they were working on them. It was freed up allocations. That will happen with projects as you give them the grants and they work through it. It doesn't cost quite as much as they thought initially, and then they free up the money. If we can, and it happens early enough, we re-grant the money back out. But in this case, at the end of a biennium, that doesn't tend to happen. The other thing we did was we took the incentive portion of the feedlot, county feedlot money, we reduced that part. The counties all received their base funding, and they received their standard once they show us that they've met the inspection goals and those sorts of things. They also get another bump in their money. And then there's a final, if they achieve above those, there's an incentive portion to do. And that's, we've been now under that system for about 4 to 5 years where we've really changed the way the grants were rather than a block grant. It's a performance grant on what they do. So we were able, for the most part, do that. We also reduced, as you will see in every budget, we reduced the administrative costs and try to do things more efficiently and effectively. We're getting down to those minimums where more cuts than that will cost us in actually performing and providing the services to the rest of the agency. We now have computers that are 10 years old. They're actually breaking on us. So we've maximized the life of the extent of those sorts of things to do them. And they no longer run the big data programs that people have to do their job. So with that, I just wanted to provide, in June then, we had the unallotment that occurred. And for fiscal year 10, that was occurred in two areas. Again, administrative appropriation. And then we cut a portion of the stormwater grants that were to go out, and the portion that we cut was the outreach and the generating model ordinances. We retained the money that we are able to do to get the BMPs and those standards done, and so our staff are working on those.
So let me just, so what got cut was the new standards for stormwater management? Is that what you just said?
Madam Chair, a portion of that new money.
A portion. So what does that mean for results?
That means the BMPs will be completed, and we are matching that with some federal dollars coming in. So the standard part of that will be completed, and actually with some of the federal dollars we'll complete the ordinance component, the education component, and the outreach with other dollars. So the project still will get done. It will be achieved in a different way.
So all components of the project will get done?
Yes, ma'am.
Good. Okay.
And for the other, in fiscal year 11, what we eliminated was the small amount of money that was left in the land program of the general fund. There was very little of that we actually had in land anymore at this point. We took a small reduction in our environmental assistance and cross-media to do, and we did a very small in the water operations, not that related to the Clean Water Fund activities we're doing, but a small amount in our travel and that related to permitting and compliance and enforcement. So with that, just a quick reminder of what we were given as guidelines to develop our plan was a 3% on the operating reduction, which is the unspent part as of December for fiscal year 2010, and the budgeted part for 2011. And for our grants, it was a 6%, again, for the unspent dollars in 2010 and the budgeted part for 2011. We were guided to exclude the Clean Water Fund because of the constitutional component, and we were also excluded the federal dollars from that. So with that, I first thought I'd just give you a little bit more detail.
Oh, excuse me, Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Ms. Hallback, on the federal funding, is some of that tied in where we have to essentially have a maintenance of effort with your agency's dollars to keep the federal dollars coming in? Or does 319 funds require that? I mean, so is there a portion of agency funds that then have to go off the table as well because they bring in the federal money?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, we have, for those federal dollars that we have a matching for, we have sufficient, so we did not automatically take those off the table. But we do have some grants where we do have to match, and we have sufficient dollars to match even with these reductions. So we'll lose no federal dollars either. So again, just very quickly, because I'll go into the impacts in a little bit. These were the target numbers that Mr. Reinhold shared that rolled up into the ultimate. First, the operating portion, and then secondly, the grant dollars. And we will talk in detail about which grants and how much those grants are. And that, again, when you look at this small spreadsheet, you'll actually see those dollars by grants. So on the back side of it, you'll see a listing of the grants and how much we would eliminate of each grant. You recall last week when we talked our guiding principles, even for going into the budget and using our monies, they were some of those kind of principles actually when we looked for the reductions and creating the reduction. In other words, that we're able to maintain those permitting timeliness. We were asked about that, maintaining our compliance activities, making sure that our activities that are ongoing and necessary and that we are receiving for the most part fees, that we meet those obligations and those outcomes. Making sure that we have the staff to achieve the Clean Water Fund outcomes that we got, making sure that we have staff to meet the federal stimulus and that we're able to do those. So with these reductions, you will not see a reduction in our permit timeliness, making sure we have compliance in that level playing field, making sure we meet the clean water goals. So those goals will be achieved. So then we get a little bit more into then how, what are we really going to do in managing to do, and that is specifically what this document will tell you as you walk through under the general funds. It gives you the reduction targets by fiscal year and it's biennium reduction. And it tells you generally what sorts of impacts it will be. So when we look at the general fund operating, we're really looking to reassign staff to priority and funded activity. And that means using their skills in the areas of the Clean Water Fund programs funded and the federal stimulus dollars. So while we'll be taking these cuts, we will be using the staff to do other important work. What we'll be doing is reducing some of our educational efforts, and you'll see that along the way, and we will be reducing in every area our travel and those sorts of activities, but maintaining to the extent possible all of our staff and moving them to priority and funded work to do. In the area of our special revenue funds, when you see that, that's actually our indirect area, and so that is where most of our administrative costs, so the lights on activities, our fiscal staff, our contract staff, and so we will still be taking similar reductions from those. And we will be reducing our fleet, for instance, and so the general fleet will be reduced, but we will still maintain the fleet for our monitoring crew, and that our compliance staff are getting out. And the others will be asked to use the video conferencing, a telephone, and maybe a few less person-to-person in-meeting travel, but certainly still our monitoring, our permitting, and our compliance people will get out to meet and do that work. We will eliminate any vacancies that we have. And so that is part of why we will be moving. We have not hired into the agency new staff for a long time now, and so we've seen nearly a 10% reduction in staff. So it is important for us to reassign people where the work is and where the funding is and make sure that we're meeting those basic outcomes of the agency. To do. And then in the area, particularly in the remediation program that we discussed, we talked about the reduction and how that relates to the bonding in the closed landfill. This reduction will actually come from our voluntary investigation and cleanup, which has some appropriation to it, but it's also a fee for service. Because of the economy, while we've still had people signing up for it, we've had fewer projects come through. And so we have some staffing dollars that have really accrued because we've moved that staff into Superfund work. And so we have some staffing accrual here, and that's really what this fund is. So it's not from the closed landfill program, and it's not from the Superfund or the LUSP program. It's really the fee-for-service program. Then I thought I would highlight, because generally people want to know how we're doing with the grant.
Excuse me, just before we go on to the next, Representative Anderson.
Just a quick question, Madam Chair. Tell me again, I can't remember, how many FTEs do you have?
We have changes, but we have about 928 right now.
Okay, great, thank you.
So, again, we have a number of grants, and so from when we looked at where our grants were, we looked at new program grants and then the ability to maintain those grants with our partners to the extent we are. We have work done by counties, and again, we want to ensure that they can do the work that they're doing for us. It doesn't mean we were able to totally do that, but we did try our best to minimize any reduction. So in the general fund, you'll see no reduction to the feedlot grants. You will see a small reduction to the Clean Water Partnership grants, which equates to a reduction to the Clean Water Partnership grants, which equates to about two projects in fiscal year 10 and about three projects in fiscal year 11. And so those aren't dedicated to any specific project right now. Those would be projects that come through the grant application process.
Let me hang on to that. The Clean Water Partnership grants, you are going to reduce it somewhat. Do you know what percentage that is?
No, I'd have to run it. I could do it, but it's a typically, the general fund together is 6%. So between the in fiscal year 11, it would be a 6% reduction because the stormwater grant doesn't exist in fiscal year 11. So it's probably more like 4%, 3-4% in fiscal year 10.
We will need to think about, I mean, we're going to, now, let me just ask, is that, when you talk about the Clean Water Partnership grants, that's on line 36. Is that what I'm looking at, the $2 million, a little over $2
million? That's correct.
And that's what would be reduced?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay.
So we would reduce those in fiscal year 10. And then we would also reduce again in fiscal year 11.
Okay, the reason I asked that is we funded Clean Water Partnership grants with the new money, and we have to watch the supplant issue there. So it seems to me if we reduced it these by the same amount. We're generally reducing across our budget or across the state. I have to think about that, probably across the state. It would not be inappropriate, but if we were to reduce it more than that, it would be inappropriate. And that's one of the things this committee's got to be thinking about. Does that make sense? Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, and Ms. Halbach, could you provide the committee with an organizational chart of the commissioner's office with salaries as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Jessica. So the stormwater compliance grants, we have completely eliminated that. That was a one-time funding of $100,000 in only in fiscal year 10, and our recommendation was to eliminate that.
Well, remind me if that was one of the things that we did in the clean water with the new clean water money.
Madam Chair, I don't believe so. Because we did our best to eliminate, you know, not to touch and not to do anything relative to that to the extent we could. And Mr. Mueller, my fiscal manager, just told me that it's 3.6% for the Clean Water Partnership in 2010 and 13% in 2011.
So we'll have to look at the average of that and see what that is, because he'll be doing that next, I bet. Okay. All right. So we, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And could you provide us, in addition to what Representative Hansen has asked for about salaries, et cetera, could you provide us also any information there would be for regarding contracts with, and I guess where I'm going is that I had heard of some agencies cutting staff but instituting contracts with other people, and I'm wondering if you could give us a break and listing if there are any contracts that we are using to get the work done.
Madam Chair, I could answer that, but we'll do it. We have not cut staff and then had the work done by that. The work that is contracted out or grants now is the work we have traditionally given contracts or grants to. But we can certainly give you information on the contracts.
Mr. Chair, maybe I used the wrong word. I was thinking of maybe consulting contracts, consulting that would provide pseudo-type labor to the agency.
Madam Chair, members, again, what we have consulting work is typically relative, for instance, on the stormwater BMPs, for some of our research, for the closed landfill program where they actually do the construction and they do the design at our requirements. We do not have and have not cut staff and then hired somebody back in to do that work. But we will make sure that you have it so you can make that determination yourself. Okay, the average is 8.3%.
So something that you would probably think is too high for a cut for the whole general fund.
I think it's appropriate, and I think it falls within what last year we thought a reduction to the Clean Water Partnership grants could sustain and still maintain a base level to do the protection grants as we were looking for them. The rest of the decision will be yours to make.
Thank you, and we will do that, but I will say that the rule of thumb will need to be looking out for the Clean Water Partnership grants in with the new money and the whole issue of supplanting. So that's something we have to take into consideration.
So In the environmental fund, we took a similar approach, so we have recommended eliminating the new composting grants. Again, a program that was just getting started, that isn't general work and operations of the counties. And in doing this, it allowed us to take less from the SCORE grants, which is the typical grants that the counties use to run their recycling and waste reduction in household hazardous waste grants. And in fact, we took nothing from the household hazardous waste grant program.
Okay, but here we've now shifted from the general fund, which we were talking about before, now into the environment fund, which, let's remind members where this money comes from.
The environmental fund is funded from a number of sources. The largest source is the, might not be the largest anymore, but one of the major sources is the solid waste tax. The part that does not go to the general fund comes to the environmental fund and then is used. We also have annual and permit applications. So we have annual fees for hazardous waste generators and the 26 hazardous waste storage sites are permitted. They have a fee. And then we have permitted annual fees for the water permits, for the air permits, and solid waste permits do not pay that, as that was part of the explanation for the solid waste tax. The other area that comes into this is the motor vehicle transfer fee. A portion of that comes to this. In the past, that funded the inspection program that we ran for mobile sources, so your cars when they were inspected. It still helps fund our air mobile source work and that general work. So it is fees, solid waste tax. The federal dollars come into our environmental fund. So, you know, we get dollars from the federal government to operate the MPDS program and the air program, so our water permits and our air permits. We do get money from them. We get some money, as we indicated, the $319 come into that. So we do get funds from that. Last year, we also, by legislation, had the enforcement penalties come. So those penalties come to the environmental fund. 100% of those now do. And then, of course, we also receive some training and some tank fees from the SSTS area. So that's generally how it's funded.
Can you separate out and give us the amount of enforcement money? Because that could have, it's not a fee as some of these others are. If we could get that number sometime later.
We do. We've actually upgraded the charts from last week's discussion with you, and we have not only the penalties leveraged, but the penalties actually paid to us. So we've broken that out into that. You can see the penalties.
That is
not on here, and so I'll have to get that to you. But we do have that information, so it'll be quick to get it to the committee.
I mean, one of the things, members, that we have to think about is the solid waste tax. I think there's an expectation that was money going to counties that to help them run their solid waste programs. And so as we look at what the governor proposed as cuts to local units of government, it was $250 million. But these are cuts to local units of government over and above that $250 million. So as a matter of policy, I'm hearing that some folks are thinking that's not a good idea. So it's all things for us to discuss.
The while I'm on these SCORE grants, while we smoothed out the reductions in those, that is about a 2.1% reduction. So you might recall that last year we boosted that a little bit, so that there's $14,250,000 that are in the SCORE grants. This takes $333,000 each year away from them. So we did try to smooth that out and not take it all in one year. The Metro landfill grants, which are to the Metro counties, we reduced that by 5.5%. Again, we tried to smooth it out. We reduced $100,000 each year. The environmental grants, there's $119,000 appropriated each year for that. When we can find some flexibility in the budget from our land dollars, we actually have in the past boosted that. And so that's an area where we've tried to move money out for locals to do more environmental work. But this year that we were very limited in what we could do. We've smoothed that out again. The $69,000 that we would take each year pretty much limits what we'd be able to do in that area. And then the e-waste is, while that is a new program and the fees that are paid for this come from the electronic generators and the fees, we have a we made one grant request, so we put an RFP out last fall. Those applying for it didn't actually meet our scores. We do rate each with our grants. The criteria we had, they did not reach the minimum number that they needed in order for us to award the grant. So we are now in the process of doing a second round request for that. This $150,000 that we would be taking out in FY10 will not impact that. So those grants would still go out. Because it's a new program, we haven't had, there weren't a lot of requests for those dollars, and so we think we can afford to do that this year and not impact anyone. In FY11, we're not proposing to reduce those at all. So the fees would still come in, and we'll still be able to look at grants in FY11. And then, Madam Chair, I think as we had talked, we want to spend a little bit more time on the general fund dollars. And so this would prepare the committee to be thinking about what's in the general fund, how it's broke out in our area. And then also I have a slide on how at least I would, if I were making the decisions, prioritize where I might go to it, which may absolutely differ from where you will go. And the reason we provided this very large spreadsheet is because, while I'm trying to summarize it on the sheet, on the things, we can go into as much detail as you want on this chart. This is all about the general funds. So again, the general fund is getting to be a smaller and smaller portion of our overall budget. So for the biennium, it's $21 million about of a $360 million budget. I provided the numbers as it breaks up each fiscal year of the biennium, and then I summarized generally for the biennium how that money is used. So approximately $8 million of it is staff salaries. And you recall that last year in the legislation, we were required to use each fiscal year at least $1.25 million for monitoring to maintain that base. That's in that $8 million. So, you know, $2.5 million of it is the monitoring dollars.
Yes.
Ms. Halbach, I didn't follow that. That's a cut, isn't it, up there, the 8.2? And then I thought you were talking about a minimum spending. I missed it.
No, this, while it's a reduction, we had a little bit of operating reductions at the end of June. This is actually the budget dollars. This is before cutting. So this would be our budget dollars. Okay.
Madam Chair, that's the general fund dollars that are left before the proposed cuts?
Madam Chair, that's correct. Before any proposal. And this is how it breaks out in general.
So let me ask another question there. say in a program that is fee-based, like AIR, are staff salaries, any AIR permitting people in this, or are they paid for by the AIR permit fees?
Madam Chair, members, the AIR permitting is all in the environmental fund. So all staff for AIR is in the environmental fund.
Water?
Water, the majority of water is in the environmental for permitting and compliance. There's probably one or two staff in here that are relative to the feedlot program are in here. The majority of the staff are here are administrative, so the commissioner's office would be in this. My salary's in this. Lyle's salary's in this. But the majority of the work is our monitoring and the data people relative to the water monitoring, surface water and groundwater.
Okay. Representative McNamara.
Well, Madam Chair, Ms. Hallbeck, you kind of answered one of my questions I was going to ask. It's really a follow-up to Representative Hansen's question about if you could give a breakdown of the commissioner's office, and I would imagine you fall under that chart there somewhere. If we were to think, well, it'd be a good idea to cut some of that, seeing how there's so many of you here tonight, if we were to cut it, and I'm saying that sarcastically for the tape, there's almost nobody in the audience tonight at 10 to 8. If we were to cut some and we cut you out of here, who would be at the table tonight with the knowledge that you have if it wasn't you?
Madam Chair, members, if you cut me from the general fund, there are lots of places I could go, but I could also go to the environmental fund, and what we would end up doing to pay my salary is looking at the indirect costs. In order to keep the environmental fund at its same, we'll probably have to reduce other operating costs to manage salaries into it. The same is true if we reduce any other salaries within here, whether it's the commissioner's office or not. We would, because there isn't a lot of fluff in this budget, and so we would move that to the environmental, and we would have to look with you at what we would then reduce in the environmental area.
But Madam Chair, thank you. I don't think you're quite answering my point. If we cut you out and you're gone, your position's gone, you may take a position in a different department because of your seniority or whatever, and somebody with less seniority would be gone, but then you wouldn't be that person that you are now. If you're gone, who's going to be here tonight to answer the question?
Madam Chair, Representative, this position will exist in the agency. It will either be funded from the general fund or it will be funded from indirect, from the cost that we take from our other, and it will be in the environmental fund, the special revenue fund. This would be deemed as one of those positions. It might not be me in it, but it would be one of those positions that an agency of this size couldn't manage without fiscal responsibility. Madam Chair, this also shows you then for the biennium the total of the Clean Water Partnership grants, the dollars allocated to it, the feedlot grants allocation, the dollars associated with the stormwater compliance. So that's what that compliance is. It's a shorthand word. It's the $100,000 for the stormwater. It's the SSTS grants that we have, both for the ongoing work that our counties do and then some of the new inventory work that came. And then the river watch that ran up to the Red River watershed up there. And then finally, we have another funding that includes the health department bio monitoring that we pass through to them. That's $450,000 each year. The stormwater activity we've been talking about, and then attorney general fees. So we do have to pay for our attorneys that help support us.
Now, aren't your attorneys attributed to like AIR or water or No?
Not directly, Madam Chair. They work across the media. We do have people, but we don't track their hours in that manner, so we do have kind of a reduction off the top of the program to fund them. We have a contract with the AGs to do. And so it's not a one-for-one directly.
But it would be possible to say that all the air work by the Attorney General staff could be paid for by the air fees, which would mean it would come out of the Environment Fund.
Madam Chair, that'd be correct.
You could do that, but you're not doing that now.
We're not doing it 100% that way.
What percent do you think? Do you know how much, Attorney General, that would be an important thing to know, how much Attorney General is in that staff salary? That's where it is, right?
It's not in the staff salary. It's actually in the last number, the $2,229,000.
Oh, AG, I see. That would be helpful to know.
We will get that information.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hallbeck, I want to go back to the federal grants and say a 319 grant. How much indirect cost do you capture off of a federal grant?
The 319 federal grant, we do have a federal indirect rate, and it is only off the salaries from that. So the exact number, I don't know. The federal rate is about 28%. We'd have to get back to you the exact dollar amount, but it's 28% only on the salaries. So the pass-through dollars, we do not take the indirect rate off.
And would it be a different rate depending on the source of the funds, say if you have stimulus dollars?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, no. We use the same federal rate for all of our federal dollars.
Madam Chair, Ms. Hallbeck, any increase in federal dollars coming in provides you with additional funding because you're getting more indirect.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, that's correct. If it has staff salaries to it, if it's only grants going out, then we would not.
Okay. MIDS?
That's the minimal impact design standards for the stormwater.
Okay. Well, then help me. When I look at the multimedia programs on this sheet, how does that fit into this?
Which sheet are you on? The big one? How that fits into this, they're all under the multimedia. That's line 24 for folks. That is all staff salaries. That would all be in the $8,284,000.
Okay. And what results would we lose if we cut some of that?
Madam Chair, members, without knowing the exact amount, because I'd have to look at the positions, I couldn't tell you, because we would probably move those positions into the Environmental Fund, because most of these are groundwater and surface water assessment and monitoring, and some of them are water standard setting staff. So we would move those into the Environmental Fund,
but
then there would be reductions in there.
Okay, but we don't. Do we have groundwater fees that people pay into the Environment Fund?
Madam Chair, members, no. Unless it's done with a water permit. So if someone installed a municipal pond wastewater treatment system and they're required to monitor around it, they'll have wells there, but it's through the permit application. It's not specifically for those wells.
It would be helpful if you would give us some breakdown of the multimedia program operations.
We would do that. The last slide I have is just, again, as you can see, most of, you can see where the money breaks down. So if I were to rank the priorities, if I were actually making selections, you have to first decide what's on the table, what's off. So depending on how you make decisions about the grant work versus staffing work, that would change these. If we were going forward and we did it in priority, we'd still eliminate and recommend that you eliminate those one-time funds, the grant activities. We would reduce the health biomonitoring because that isn't critical to our agency mission, and we do not have outcomes associated with those. That's just money delivered to the health department. And then for the Clean Water Partnership grants, what we would recommend is that there be $850,000 reduced each year, which is the recommended that we did last year coming into the budget process, which would retain about $1.5 million still in grants there, which we believe is the base needed to use this as a protection program. So again, your choice, there we go. And then we would move to the staffing. Again, because that staffing is our monitoring and our assessment staffing. And so that's really, you couldn't go much farther than that without first having target and secondly knowing exactly what's on, but that is the way we would approach it.
I think this has been extremely helpful. I mean, I think you have laid it out well. I think we'll have more questions besides the ones we've already put on the table, but it's certainly clear and I think helpful. Members have questions, or are you just so...
I just have a question, Ms. Chair, about the process.
Mm-hmm.
How will we proceed? I mean, for instance, if we don't think it's appropriate to take $900,000 out of the Game and Fish Fund because of that was done by licenses, what? And we would like to come up with something else, how will the process work where we would say and do that?
Okay. We will... on Thursday, start going through the DNR bill, just the way, hopefully, that Ms. Halbach went through this. And we will see where the potentials are for general fund cuts, just like we have seen where the potentials are here. And so I think we'll have a much better idea, because I suspect we're not going to be cutting the Game and Fish Fund. So we're going to have to figure out where mm-hmm. in the agency we're going to lose results. Mm-hmm. So that will be our task, and I would certainly hope that members are writing down. I've written down some that I think are going to be ones that we're going to have to put on the table. But that's what we'll do, and we'll compile a list of them, try to get up to our target, and then we'll discuss it. I mean, that would be, but it's all going to be done quickly. So does that make sense to members? Representative McNair?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So just to follow up to Representative Anderson's earlier question, so the anticipation, maybe next week you might have a target, and then we'll begin to potentially develop an alternative plan to what the governor's presented with some of the listening to this discussion as it comes forward here.
Well, we know we're going to have a certain minimum, so we might as well say, my only alternative or my only caveat to that would be to say we need to start putting some stuff on the table right now and kind of adding to it. That doesn't mean we can't subtract other things when we hear something we want to subtract, but I don't want us to wait. I guess that's my guidance here.
So I understand, Madam Chair, when you say add to, you mean add to the things that would get cut, so additional cuts is what you're talking about?
Well, if we're not going to cut from
ATV, or we're not going to cut from Game and Fish, we're going to have to cut from someplace else. We know we're going to have substantial cuts. So as we're going through this, I hope members are writing down things that they say, well, this is a lower priority for me than other things, because we're going to have that list on the table. And I don't know what the number is going to be, but my guess is that it's reasonable to think it might be $13 million, because that's what the governor suggested. Only because that's what the governor suggested. So that's, if it were less, I think we'd all be grateful. But since that's the governor's recommendation, I think we have to start with that as a touchstone. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Process-wise, members, does that make sense, what we're going to do? Okay. Well, you've been really helpful, and I know you're going to be in touch with our fiscal analyst a lot, because that's how we'll manage to get through this. I don't see any other business members. Any other questions? With that, the meeting is adjourned.